It's 6:41. Crud. It's gonna have to go just. Is it okay if I go just a little bit past normal? Just because I gotta. All right. So I want to talk about our direction in life, and now we got to make sure this works. Oh my goodness. It doesn't have to be on. This should just turn. Can you see if that works up there? So we have a. We have our new thing here, but it has to work. I don't know. Well, no. Yeah. There we go. But it's not in the right point. Okay. No more hand claps every time we get something restarted. Okay. All right. Let's get going. Okay. So there's a point of decision that we all come to in life, hopefully, about whether we're going to pursue God with all our heart or whether we're just going to end up and take sidetracks and end up meandering about life, really going absolutely nowhere. So I wanted to, first of all, start off with just talking a little bit about what happened to me when I came to that realization in my life that God was absolutely the direction that I was going to go without any exception. That was what I was going to do. And so, boy, it's not moving up there. Can you move it forward? That's a bummer. Here we go. So, this is actually me when I was in about 10th grade. And I just want to give you kind of a little bit of a background on what I was like. I believed in God, and I definitely professed Christ, but I still don't even know if I was actually saved because I didn't have any real concern about God in my life. I was happy with my life as it was. I thought everything was fine. So to me, pursuing God just had no bite to it. I just really didn't really care. And in fact, I suffered from something that I call inoculation. And that means that you get just enough of a bacteria to create a resistance. That's what inoculation is, right? So I call it that because I went to church all my life, and I think that it actually created a resistance to God because after a while, you really couldn't say anything that I hadn't heard. I grew up in church. And so anything that would come my way, it just seemed like ho-hum, more of the same, and it didn't really make any difference in my life. And so I was what I would call a tough nut to crack. So when I was in high school, my life had absolutely no connection to anything that I had learned growing up, any desire to follow Christ. I didn't care at all, and it showed in much of how I acted, how I treated people, the things that I pursued, what I was involved in. All of those things really came out that I just didn't care about what I knew about God. I believed in God, theoretically, but I had absolutely no desire to move forward. Well, something really changed all that, and that was when I was between my 11th and 12th year in high school, I went to a place called The Summit. It's in Colorado Springs. And my father set me up on this to go. I could go with my sister, who's the next one over. In fact, just to get a shorter shot, there's me at about, I'm a junior in high school. And here's my sister, Bonnie. She's a year younger than me. And there was four of us going. This was my best friend, Bob, who was from California. He was in for the summer, and he was going to go with me on this. And then there was the girl, Vicky, who I liked. And somehow we worked that out so that we could all go to this thing. It was a big master plan for me to hook up with Vicky, right? So that was actually the main reason I went, was to see her. So we went to this place, again, called The Summit. Now, The Summit was, again, this ministry, and you can see on there that it was this, it's this big hotel. It's really pretty cool. And you can see by that little picture on the right there that there's all these kids. It has programs all through the week. It's a great program, lasts 2 weeks, actually. And I think it's really good, but you can imagine how I viewed it. I thought the whole thing was boring from the very beginning because all you're going to do is talk about God, and I've heard about God all my life, and I don't really care to hear about God because it's boring, boring, boring. That's how I felt from the moment I stepped on there. I thought, oh my, it's going to be meetings all day long. I like to hook up with this girl, Vicky, but I really don't want to have to wade through all this boring stuff about God in the process. So, here's what happened. I thought to myself, maybe I should take my dad up on his challenge. Now, his challenge to me was, see, he had caught me loaded one day and didn't know how to help me. He didn't know how to convince me to quit getting high. He didn't know what to do with me. So one day he told me, Bobby, if you read the Bible, I guarantee you God will change your life. That's what he told me. If you read the Bible, God will change your life. Now, he had told me this sometime long before I was at the summit. It's just that when I was at the summit, I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be so boring. Maybe I'll take my dad up on this challenge. And furthermore, if I do get changed by God, then this girl Vicky will like me, because she didn't like me because she knows I'm not very spiritual. In fact, that I'm almost anti-spiritual, and she's a good church girl. So that was kind of my theory. It'd be good if God changed my life. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read my Bible all the way through this whole two-week thing, and then once and for all, I'll be able to know if what my dad is telling me is true, that God will change my life if I read the Bible. Can you believe it? He was right. It was unbelievable. I was absolutely a very tough nut to crack. So every single day, all day long at this program called The Summit, I sat there and read my Bible. That's all I did. They went through class after class. I paid absolutely no attention and just read my Bible. And towards the very end, I know it kind of sounds cliche, but that's how it actually happened. Towards the very end of this two-week program, it was as though the light switch was turned on, and I thought, it's real. This whole thing about God, it's real. It's not just discussion. It's not theory. It's not just by. It's like the real deal. And so immediately I thought, I have to go tell my friend that I showed you earlier, Bob, and of course I have to tell Vicky about it, and I have to explain to them what has just happened, because this is like mind-blowing to me. I can't even believe. So I go tell Vicky, and I take her out in the back, and I said, Vicky, you know what happened? I realized that everything about God is real. It's really real. And she just kind of nodded and kind of like, uh-huh. And it'll go away in about 2 weeks, she said. You know how these fads go. They last a couple weeks, and you'll be probably back to normal. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. Do you realize who you're talking to? I didn't go, you know, I've been to camp, like, ever since I was a little kid. I was never one of those people that had an experience. I was never one of the people that got emotional and said, oh, okay, and then go home. I'm not one of those people, okay? I am telling you that God is real. That's what I'm telling you. I am telling you that I understand the reality, and it's true. And she didn't believe me. And I said, well, you just watch, and you will see how real it is in my life. And so then I thought, so I went back to school. This was in the summer. So school was coming back, and I mean, I was so completely, how do I even want to say it? I was so completely blown away with this fact that we live in a world where there's a real God, and that everything then, it's like it changes everything. And everybody that I know needs to understand this truth about God. I mean, they're running around not even getting it. And so I've got to explain this to everybody. So the idea of being a new creation is in the Bible. I really felt that way. I felt like, you have got to know. So there's a picture, the arrow is pointing at me, and this was in a high school hall. And the picture of the guy on the right, that was my best friend. And I started telling people, like my friend there, I told in every single class that I was in, I talked to everybody and everybody through every class, every teacher, and anything I was involved with, I told them about what God was all about and that's what they needed to understand. I couldn't stop telling everybody. It was like I had a revelation from God that I'm supposed to tell the world, and that's what I went about doing. Every paper I wrote, if it was in English, it was going to be on either salvation, eternal security. It was going to be on something to let them know that this is what it was like. I was in wrestling. The coaches called me Holy Roller and Baptist and all these things. And, you know, actually, my friends, they didn't mind that I had changed for the most part, except that I wasn't doing some of the fun things that they wanted me to do anymore. So one day, this friend particularly on the right here, who was my best friend at school, he got a gang of guys, and as I was sitting all by myself in the cafeteria eating, this group of guys surrounded me, and he was the leader of it, and he said, "Bob, this whole church thing has got to end. We are going to take you out and get you drunk right now and just end this whole church experience." And I sat there. It was kind of wild. I was sat there and I looked around and I said, "You guys don't understand. This is my new life. This is the life you can have." I mean, it was, they had no concept, and I just couldn't seem to get it out. I'm different. God is real. And so that for me was my point of decision, where I realized that absolutely there was a point that I was headed towards, and it was no longer going to be a diversion from God, but that everything in my life was going to point at getting closer to God. It was going to be pointed at following Him, obeying Him, and those things. And so I back up for a moment, and I, you know, most of this was about salvation. But after salvation, we find that we can kind of lull ourselves into feeling okay about our faith. It's not as exciting anymore. We've known God for a while. But really, the same question is there that was there in the very beginning, and that is, where are we headed? Where are you headed today with the way that we're living our everyday life? I think that we have two main options. We can move forward and live a life with meaning, pursuing God, or we can live a life without meaning, pursuing things that don't matter. Now, the last time I spoke, about a month ago, a lot of you, I'm sure, was here. I talked about life without meaning is very similar to sitting back and eating a banana. Because it resembles the idea of a monkey eating a banana and not having any understanding about their existence and just not caring. And while life around them could be falling apart, all they care about is having a bite of another banana. In Matthew 6:21, it says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And as I said then, I wanted to reiterate that when we find that our banana, meaning those things in our life that have no real value, become our treasure, when we focus on things such as our career, such as our new home, a car, when we focus on those things and feel like that is our treasure, it becomes it's our heart. You see, we're holding on to something as unimportant as a banana and clutching to that as though that's what matters in life. Also, I mentioned that when I do that, it makes me feel like a monkey. And I don't mind putting this picture of me looking like a monkey because when I act like that, I want to think of myself as a monkey because it's stupid. It makes no sense at all. And I also talked about the idea that when we're holding on to this banana, we find ourselves trapped. And in South America, they use these monkey traps. And what it is it's something that holds either a nut or a banana that the monkey can't get away from. Even though a hunter will come to get the monkey who's holding onto the banana, the monkey will not let go of the banana inside the trap. And so the hunter is able to capture the banana. I'm sorry, the monkey, even though the monkey could just let go. And it makes no sense. We say, just why doesn't the monkey just let go? Why doesn't he say, okay, it's just a banana, I'll let it go, I'll go on, I'll run away from the hunter? But they don't. They hold on and they look around and they try to pull and they keep going and they will not let go of the unimportant thing that they have any more than we will let go of the unimportant things in our life that we're holding on to. We just won't let go. No matter how many sermons we sit through, no matter how many times we read our Bibles and think to ourselves, we should just let go of some of the things that we're holding on to, we just won't do it. We are trapped just like the monkey. So it begs the question, why don't we just let go? Why? Why don't we just let go? Why don't we choose to live life with meaning? When we know, when we really think about it, we realize that these other things will not have eternal value. These other things are short-lived. They do not have meaning. Real meaning in life is to pursue a relationship with God. I think all of us will agree to that without question. And yet, we will not let go of that thing in our life that's holding us back. Why won't we do that? I want a life worth meaning. I want to pursue God. So what is that going to take? What is it going to take to understand that I have a Creator who wants to spend eternity with me? I want to spend more of my time getting into that fact. My Creator wants to spend time with me. He wants to spend time with you. Our Savior loves us. He demonstrated His love for us by coming to earth as a man and dying for us. So Jesus told a parable about letting go of our bananas. Now, you won't find bananas in the Bible, but He certainly talked about letting go of the things in this life that don't matter and instead choosing a life where we are pursuing the things that do matter. We are pursuing a relationship with Christ. So there is a parable called the Pearl of Great Price. And we find that in Matthew 13, 45 and 46. It says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant searching for fine pearls. When he found a pearl of great value, he went out and sold everything he had and bought it. Now, most the gem was the most valued, I'm sorry, the pearl was the most valued gem prior to the 19th century. So diamonds are now the most popular, but it used to be that the pearl was. Now we have all these cultured pearls, so it's a whole different game. But it used to be that all there was back then were pearls that you actually had to find in a mollusk shell. And that wasn't so easy to find. And they were extremely valuable. Furthermore, merchants were trained to know the value. Most of the time, a merchant grew up in the family where their father was a merchant. So all of their life, they were experiencing the valuation process with their parents, understanding how to go about valuing and understanding what makes a pearl worth a lot of money. So the beauty that you'll see in a pearl, by the way, comes from the nacre. And the nacre is what is produced by the mollusk, and it coats the item that falls into the shell. So what you have is a shell that maybe gets a stone or a piece of bone or something like that, and it gets lodged in the shell. And then what happens is the mollusk, in order to protect itself, it may try to remove it, but since it doesn't have fingers, you know, just to throw it out, it may not be able to expel it. So instead, it secretes this nacre that covers the item, such as a bone or a bone or something like that, and softens it so that it's not scratching him so bad. And it takes a long time to develop a pearl of any size because this is a very thin layer that keeps covering the stone. So that's where the beauty comes from, is that nacre. Well, it happens to be that only 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 500,000 will have a pearl in it. Now think of those odds. Now the 1,000 are for the most common kinds of pearl shells, and the 500,000 is for the most rare. So if you average it out in there, you know, it's well above the 1,000, but rare is it going to be up to the 500,000. But either way, imagine you are one of those people that are out there trying to find pearls. First you got to find the mollusks, right? So that takes a fair amount of time. And then you finally find the clam or whatever it is. Then you spend the time to open it and then say, another one without a pearl in it. So you can see very quickly why a pearl back in that time when collecting them was a lot, was slow, why they would be worth so much and why they would be valued so much just because it took so long to get it. And most will be a very small and off-colored and oddly shaped. So because if you imagine that you have a bone and it's being covered with the nacre, that would not probably produce a round pearl, right? You would have to have the core typically very round in order for the nacre covering it to create a round pearl. So again, it's very rare that you're ever going to have anything where you have a perfectly round pearl, certainly. So the value of the pearl is found in its size, in its weight, shape, the surface, if there's any imperfections in the surface. The coloring is important. The luster is how much it kind of radiates the light. The orient is the different shimmering colors that you'll get. And the overtones are the tones that are on top of the shimmering orient. Okay, so with all that said, understanding just a little bit about how we go about valuing a pearl, imagine then this merchant that has been searching for a beautiful pearl and walks in to a dealer and finds the perfect pearl. Perfectly round. Again, we've seen cultured pearls perfectly round, but this is natural. So whatever lodged itself in that clam had to be of perfect shape, and the nacre had to be spread time and time again, which was years, to get this perfectly round pearl, where the iridescence was perfectly covering the entire pearl surface. There's no scratches. It's just an absolute beauty to behold sitting there for the merchant. And I try to imagine if I was a merchant looking for that and I understood all of this value, to see that pearl would first be just an astonishment. How could it be that there is this perfect pearl? I think we'd be in awe of it. And then he might say, that's impossible. There's no way you can have such a perfect, perfect pearl. And then he might ask, wait a minute, is it real? I mean, is there some kind of forgery going on of some sort? And yet, because it's sitting there and it's radiant, realizing that it is real, that merchant is just mesmerized over the beauty and the perfection of that pearl. Enchanted by its beauty. I think next the merchant concludes, I gotta have that thing. I have got to have that pearl. I have spent my whole life looking for pearls, and I have never, ever, ever, ever seen anything that approaches the beauty I see in that perfect pearl. Then his next thought is, okay, I'll give everything for that pearl. Anything, everything. I don't care what it takes. I want that pearl. Pearls are my life. And this is the perfect pearl. It makes sense when you consider the life of a merchant who has always considered finding the best pearl that he possibly could, and then runs into the perfect pearl. And it begs the question to me, well, why wouldn't everybody buy the pearl? Why is it even for sale? Wouldn't everybody have come purchased it? But it was probably pretty expensive. He had to sell everything to get it. Why doesn't everybody buy the pearl? And I think the answer is that not everybody understands the value of that pearl. If you hadn't been raised in a family of merchants that were pearl merchants, you wouldn't have had all those years where your father was showing you the nuances so that you could come to appreciate how rare a pearl like this really is. That you could come to appreciate that the core of this pearl, by the way, has to be perfectly round. That the nacre has to be laid on this thing perfect, layer after layer after layer. And it has to be just right. I mean, that this is impossible. This is insane that we are even looking at that thing. If you don't realize what you're looking at, you would not buy that pearl. That is why everybody doesn't buy the pearl. Now, as we relate the perfect pearl, because as it said in Matthew, the perfect pearl was a representation of heaven. And actually, I wonder if heaven is really more about a relationship with God than it is a place that we go. You ever wonder why the Bible doesn't talk a lot about heaven? Usually the answer I hear in Sunday school is it's more than we can understand. And that might be true. But it also might be that really heaven is less about where it is and what's there than who's there. I believe that the pearl is really about Jesus Christ and the relationship that we can have with the absolute perfect person, Jesus Christ. And that if we understand how perfect he is and how wonderful a relationship with that perfect pearl would be with Jesus Christ. If we can grasp that, that it would completely change what we're willing to give up in our life to pursue it. So what's holding you back from letting go of all your earthly treasures in order to pursue the perfect pearl we have in Jesus Christ? What in our life is more important to us than that relationship with Jesus Christ? Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, I want the relationship with Christ. I kind of want both. But the Bible tells us that when our heart is in one thing, it can't be completely in the other. It's why we can't serve both God and mammon, because we're not built that way. When we get into things, even these bananas affect our relationship with our spouses, don't they? Let alone our pursuit of God. You see, the merchant was willing to sell everything once he understood the true value, or found the pearl, and he understood the true value of it. So let's just go back over for a moment what the perfect pearl in Jesus Christ is. He is our Savior. He demonstrated his love for us by coming to earth as a man and dying for us. He wants to spend eternity with us. That is a big deal. He is our Creator who wants to spend eternity with us. It's hard to even fathom that the Creator of the world even wants to know me, even is willing to accept me, let alone the Creator of the universe wants to spend eternity with us. And instead, I'm holding on to some stupid bananas. What are we thinking? He wants a love relationship with us. In Ephesians 3:18, it says that you may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and the length and height and depth, and thus to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, so that you may be filled up to all the fullness of God. The fact is that God loves us, and he wants a love relationship with us. And to me, when you think about it, it only makes absolute sense that pursuing that life with meaning is, I guess I said it, it's the only thing that makes sense. And so, you know, I ask us that question. Are we holding on to earthly hopes or pursuing a relationship with God? Which are we doing? Where are you headed today? More bananas? A bigger pile of bananas? The perfect banana? Too often rotten bananas? Or a pursuit of a relationship with a Creator God who loves us, wants to spend eternity with us? I want to be consistently determined every single day that this choice is going to take absolute priority over anything on this side. I challenge every one of you and myself to not let these stupid bananas stop me from this relationship with God. To not let that career hold me back from spending the necessary time I need relating to God. That vacation, I don't know, it doesn't matter what it is, but there's just so many things that keep coming up in my life that get in the way of this, and I keep letting that stop me. I just keep doing it. And I'm tired of it. That is where I want to go. I want it to be so clear that all I see is a straight track to a relationship with God. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I just ask that you would continue to convict me in this area, Lord, that you would convict every single one of us, that we would be willing to absolutely say no to anything that we can come to understand is coming in the way of our pursuit of you. And maybe there's somebody here today that has never even come to the point in your life where you have made the first connection with God, where you've come to the point where you have decided, God, I know that you are real. It's absolutely got to be true. It's harmonizing in my soul. I've heard it all my life, and yet I have decided that maybe right now is the time where I want to decide that I want to begin my eternal relationship with you. If that's you, I want to pray with you, and maybe just pray along with me. Dear Lord, I want to begin a relationship with you, Lord. I know that I'm a sinner, and yet I know from the Bible that you have died on the cross and that you have forgiven me of my sins, and all I need to do is to believe in you to accept that forgiveness. And these things I ask in your name.